Our society has so many flaws, problems, that instead of confronting them, we choose the easier way to ignore them. The ones which make the law, implement it, are the only ones responsible for breaking them. Thinking they camouflage amidst the chaos of a country consisting of more than a billion lives. When we think of a good leader, what are some of the things that come to our minds? Selfless, not corrupt. But what about a criminal? That might be the last thing anybody would want a leader of one of the biggest economies to be. The legislator, the executive, the judiciary, and the media are said to be the pillars of an ideal democracy. A legislator is an assembly with the authority to make laws for a political entity, such as a country. The executive is responsible for the implementation of laws in the country. Now, most importantly, the judiciary. What does the judiciary do? The judiciary is a watchdog, the guardian of democracy, supposed to interpret laws, settle disputes. But what if the lawmaker themselves think they are invisible, immune to the weapons created to deliver justice, maintain peace? Will the system act now or never? Our heroes, whose sacrifice we celebrate every Independence or Republic Day, had a dream. But I think not only we have let them down, but also shattered their dream into a million fragments of nothingness. How deep have we corrupted the book of law? Here are some of the heartbreaking statistics. A total of 363 MPs and MLAs have declared criminal cases against them. An analysis of 2,495 candidate affidavits by the Association for Democratic Reforms has found the lawmakers face charges framed against them by the Court of Offences falling under Section 8A1. 2 and 3 of the Representation of the People Acts 1951. On an average, the criminal cases faced by the MPs against whom charges have been framed have been pending since 7 years, while those faced by MLAs have been pending since 6 years. Charges as serious as abduction, dacoity, and attempts to cause death or grievous injury. When we talk about such heinous crimes, we often think about how cruel or inhuman a person can be. But if power resides in the hands of such people, what will our fate be? The rising number of elected representatives with criminal backgrounds in the parliament and state legislature is a matter of deep concern to all law-abiding and right-minded citizens. The increasing trend of criminalization of politics is dangerous and has steadily been eaten into the vitals of our democratic policy. Along with growing corruption of humongous nature, this perilous drift needs to be checked both by all political parties as well as the judiciary. Timely corrective measures need to be put in place without any further delay. For the common man to have faith in the fairness of the system, only a time-bound justice delivery system, firmer steps by the Election Commission of India, and a proper strengthening of relevant laws can cleanse the body politic of this evil. Criminals have been active in Indian politics for decades, dating back to the country's first elections following independence in 1947. Back then, the Congress Party, which led India's struggle for independence, was the center of political gravity, and it contracted with criminals to mobilize or suppress turnout, hand out pre-election goodies, or in some extreme cases, capture polling booths. Over time, political competition intensified, and as the Congress Party's hegemony began to atrophy, criminals realized that they had accumulated enough clout, notoriety, and resources to cut out the politician and contest elections on their own. Criminals sought out politics to ensure their protection from state as well as their rivals, and to make even more money by tapping into government contracts, funds, and patronage. Across the world, elections have grown increasingly expensive. Indian parties have become so desperate for resources, they actively compete with one another to embrace tainted politicians who can cover the costs of their own campaigns, pay the party for the privilege of running, and subsidize candidates who don't have the same kind of wealth. Voters in the poor countries have all kinds of informal mechanisms of getting information outside of established media channels. In addition, literacy has steadily risen in recent years, but criminality in politics is arguably gaining ground, not diminishing, judging by the increasing share of state and national politicians with pending criminal cases. In India, universal franchise was extended from the very beginning in 1947. Over time, the core institutions of governance, the civil service, police, courts, and so on, have simply not been able to keep up with the aspirations of 1.42 billion Indians. The governance gap, further compounded by innumerable social cleavages that exist in society, has created a vacuum for savvy political entrepreneurs to fill. This is although it seems perverse democracy in action.